Today's reading is from Luke chapter 14, verses 12 through 14. He said also to the one who had invited him, "When you give a luncheon or a dinner, do not invite your friends or your brothers or your relatives or rich neighbors, in case they may invite you in return and you would be repaid. But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, and the blind, and you will be blessed, because they cannot repay you, for you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous." The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
Well, it's so good to be with you today in this final week of our Making Room series. And as we get started today, I have a question for you. How many of you fly on Southwest? Okay, so like a decent amount. There's a whole section back there that does not fly on Southwest. So whether you fly on Southwest or not, there's something unique about Southwest, which is how they do boarding and selecting your seat. Now, I did see there was a lot of controversy because they may be changing that, so we'll see if it sticks. But for now, they do this thing called open boarding, which I really call a high anxiety social experiment. Okay, so I fly Southwest a lot, and what I want you to know is that for me, the angst starts before we even get on the plane. It starts when we line up, because this is gonna tell you so much about my personality in this moment. I am that person that asks all the people around me, "What is your boarding number?" Like, if I am B25 and you are B29, you are not getting on that plane before me, okay? Like, I want to make sure we are lined up in the order we are supposed to be getting on that plane and that everything is going like it's supposed to. But then you get on the aircraft, and that is when the anxiety, like, rockets through the roof. Because when you get on, if you're group A or B, you normally have your pick of the seats. Now, I would prefer a window seat. However, I am also self-aware enough to understand that I'm probably going to need to go to the bathroom while I'm on this flight, and I don't want to be that person that makes everyone get up, so maybe I should sit on the aisle, but then if you're on the aisle, there's the beverage cart and like that hazard. So, but if you're group A or B, you normally can pick a window or an aisle seat. Then group C starts to board. Okay, and if you're already in your seat and settled, it becomes this whole vibe on the plane. Like, you're watching group C walk down the aisle, but you're trying to avoid eye contact because there's something that group C needs that you have and you don't want to give up. And what is that? It's that middle seat. That's right. It's your freedom, your room to breathe. It's like, I do not want another stranger between me and this other stranger. And so that is when I get in the mode where I'm like, wow, there's something really interesting on my phone that I must look at in this moment. Maybe if I avoid eye contact with this whole group of people, no one will sit in the middle seat. I would say it has like, you know, a 30% success rate for when that works. But in this situation, you know, making room becomes very low on our collective priority list. But I think sometimes making room is exactly what we need to do. As we go into this final week of this Making Room sermon series and this big push day of our building campaign, as we wrap it up, we're looking at how sometimes we're called to make room, even when we might not be so naturally inclined to do so. We're called to make room even when we don't really want to do it, or even when we can't see clearly what it might be in it for us or what God might do with the room that we make. So today we're looking at a parable that Jesus tells in the book of Luke. Now, Jesus tells this story when he's at someone's house for dinner. But he's not just at any old random person's home. He's in the home of a Pharisee. And if you know anything about Jesus and the Pharisees, when Jesus and the Pharisees get together, there's often a teachable moment involved on Jesus' end. Now, on paper, Jesus and the Pharisees, they should be best buds. I mean, they are all devout in their faith. They all have great knowledge of their sacred texts, the Torah. But the problem for Jesus and the Pharisees is that they interpret their faith in some significantly different ways. And just to give you a little bit more context for this dinner conversation we're about to have, the last time Jesus and the Pharisees shared a meal, there was some drama, okay? There was some drama. And it actually makes me think of, if you watch reality TV, first of all, there's no shame in that, but if you watch reality TV, you know, often there's a scene where there's like this big blow-up fight, and there's all this drama, and then 2 days later, inexplicably, they all get together for dinner, and you just don't know, like, what's going to happen. So that's kind of the scene that I imagine here as Jesus and the Pharisees gather for this Sabbath meal, this incredibly sacred and important time together, and they have this moment. So as they're eating, for Jesus, what he notices during this meal is that the mood is kind of shifting. Instead of them being focused on this like reverent moment of celebrating the Sabbath, here's what the text tells us, the text before what Suzanne read for us says. Jesus noticed how the guests sought out the best seats at the table. He notices this is becoming kind of a see and be seen kind of moment. He notices they're missing the point about what it means to be truly welcome in a place, what it means to truly give and receive hospitality. And so as Jesus notices this, what he does is he tries to draw them into the possibility that things could be different. He tries to draw them into the possibility that there might be a different way to do these social norms. Because for this group of people, there was a way that things were supposed to work. You know, you gave hospitality to someone who could repay it, who could extend that same hospitality to you. You spent time with people that felt familiar to you. So in this case, maybe Jews would eat with Jews. Gentiles would eat with Gentiles. The wealthy would eat with the wealthy. I mean, you kind of understand how this would have worked. But what Jesus is talking about here, in that text we heard read, it goes against all of that. It pushes back. It says, actually, there's a different way to do this. There's a different way to be in relationship and community with each other. So let me paint you a picture. I think even for us, as we hear this story today, the story is kind of odd. You know, I think something that maybe is a little different for us than the original hearers of this story Jesus tells is that we probably know that what Jesus is saying is like the right way to be. Right? Like, idealistically, we hear Jesus say, bring in the poor, bring in the sick, bring in people who can't do anything for you. And we're like, we know we're supposed to want to do that. But I want you to imagine doing that in your home. I want you to imagine opening up your dinner table to people with radically different life experiences than you. I think this feels hard. Because it is hard. This isn't how most of us live our lives. And I don't say that for guilt or shame or any of that junk. That's just reality. Like, our world is not set up to do that in a natural or easy way. I think there's a lot of barriers to making these kinds of connections and a lot of really practical reasons we don't seek them out. But you know, when we think about making room, sometimes making room isn't practical. But I do think it can be worth it. When I lived in Southern California, I had some friends that attended a church in downtown LA. And for those of you that don't know my story, a lot of my time when we were in Southern California, I was in seminary. And so as a seminarian, I looked at this church in downtown LA that some of my friends went to, and it was just this amazing case study for what church could be. I mean, it was one of the few churches I've encountered that was truly diverse. They, on their staff, in the people that they were reaching, I mean, they were reaching people of all ethnicities, of all socioeconomic statuses. Like, everyone was there. And so for me, as I looked at my friend's church experience, I was like, this church is the dream. Like, this is what the kingdom of heaven looks like. It's so awesome. But what I found out about this church is that the leadership really realized, yeah, we look great on paper. We do this thing well. We have a good story to tell, but we're actually missing something really crucial. We have a lot of different people in the room on a Sunday morning, but they don't actually know how to connect to each other. The soccer mom from Pasadena does not know how to connect with the person who literally lives on Skid Row. I mean, that sounds extreme, but that was actually who they were reaching. And so the church leadership, what they did is they created a structured way to make that room for people. One summer, they totally redid the way that they did small groups. And they intentionally put people together for the entire summer who represented these different groups that they reached. And all summer, they worked through this intentional curriculum. They helped put resources in place so that people could have those conversations and find commonalities despite their differences. And what they did is they helped people break down barriers. And maybe the most important thing they did is that they said every single person has a place in this community. And every single person in our community has the job of making room for someone else. It wasn't just something that the well-resourced people were called to do. It was a task that they all shared. And so when I think about what that church did, I think about the way that we live out some of our relationships. You know, sometimes our relationships can kind of live in what I would call transaction mode. So like, I do something for you, I get something in return. I serve you. I feel good about myself. None of that is inherently bad. Like, none of that is wrong. But when I think about those kinds of relationships, I just wonder if that's a complete picture. If that's a complete picture of the kind of community that Jesus is talking about when he tells this parable. When he talks about sharing a meal with people who are not the same as us, when he talks about sharing a meal with people who can't give us back the thing that we just gave them. See, I think what Jesus invites us to do as he tells this parable is to move from transactional to transformational relationships. He's inviting us to create the kind of connections that are shaped by the heart of Jesus. And when we do this, I think we can't help but make room for each other. We can't help but expand our definition of community and of who is welcome at the table. And look, friends, as much as I love a good metaphor, I think we can almost set it down for a second and just name what we're trying to say here. We expand our definition of who is welcome in this church. That is what Jesus calls us to do here, of who is welcome to be in our lives, of who's welcome to share their story and show up exactly like they are among us, whether it's in our building or it's out in the community. Jesus says, what if we made room in a different way? I think that can be a radical view of what welcome can look like. But it's also the type of welcome that Jesus calls us to create as people who say that we follow him. You know, earlier this year, we handed out keychains that said others. In the past, we've also handed out keychains that say everyone belongs. They keep finding their way on and off my church keys. I don't know if you have yours. But as we hand these keychains out, I think it's so important because what it does is it keeps it on us. It's a tangible reminder of who we want to be as this church. It's a tangible reminder that we don't just come here so we can feel good. Now, I want you to know, your pastor is an Enneagram 2. I want you to feel good. I want you to be happy. I want you to come in this place and for it to be the best part of your week. And yet, at its core, that's not actually why we do church. We come here so that the stories we read and the words we hear, so the songs that we sing, so the prayers that we pray, so the interactions that we have out there in the gathering area, so all of those things can be shaping us for when we leave this place and go into our lives. We do this so that we become more like Jesus and we become more committed to making room at the different tables that make up our church and our lives. So as I think about this campaign that we're in, I think that's actually the whole point. You know, we're not actually raising money so that we can have a fancy building at our North Campus. I mean, look, when it's done, you're going to go to the North Campus and you're going to be like, this looks pretty good. I like this. Like, it's going to be upgraded. It's going to be safer. It's going to be easier to access. All that stuff is so awesome. Like, we celebrate that. But I don't actually think that's the heart of what we're doing. We're doing this campaign so that we can create as many on-ramps as possible for people to know the love and grace of Jesus. And we're doing this, we're starting this on our North Campus. But I want us to understand as a second campus, as Midtown, that the things that we do there, we're going to see that, we're going to learn from that, we're going to replicate that here and in future locations. Everything that we do as a church is connected, and everything we do lets us step into what we think God is calling us to be as a faith community. So I want to give you a little bit of an update on the campaign, and I think we have a slide because there's numbers, and you all know, Mindy and numbers. We need some visuals. But right now, we have 129 commitments, which means we've had about over $5 million of intention, which means that we are 78% of the way to our goal. As you can see up there, to reach that last 22%, we need to have intentions of a little bit more than $1.4 million. Now, I see those numbers, and I know those are big numbers. I do. I mean, I can see that. But I also think it's possible. And maybe more importantly, that I believe it's possible, I believe it's worth the effort it takes to get there. Because again, we're not just talking about a building project. We're talking about making room for people to connect. And so I want to invite you to take a look at this video. This video is going to show you a little glimpse into the heart behind the project, the heart behind the numbers, the heart of what it means to connect as a worshiping community. So let's take a look.
First thing I think about at St. Luke's is community, church family. We're a big group of friends who come together here because we've all felt the tug of God somehow in our lives. Yeah, small groups are important because it's how we connect with people. You know, we're a big church, and that's wonderful, but at some point you need to break it down into smaller groups where you can actually connect with people and live life together. And that's what my small group does. They study together, they pray together, and like I said, they live life together. It's how we make connections.
Today, I feel like they're so much more inclusive, which is very important to me. We have two daughters that are non-binary, and myself as well. So having that support has been really important to me. Finding a church out there that would not only include me, who's part of LGBT, but my son, who is in a wheelchair and does need extra assistance. I think that's the world to me, to be able to have my family included in everything that they do here.
Like the camp I went to this summer was, we had to do a paintballing. I kind of get in the middle of the woods, so they brought it to me.
One of the best things about St. Luke's and Hub for Hope and all of the work that we do here is our community is so welcome and open, And you do not have to be a member of St. Luke's to receive services here, to be filled up here, to be poured into by our community. The Making Room campaign is going to help us reach more families because we already have this entry point where we're meeting families at a very early point in their child's life. And we know we have so many more things that we can offer.
What makes this place unique is that there is no separation for us between secular or our lives or our world or our outer lives and what happens in our faith life. That for us, it is all connected. That what is holy may be the walk you have holding the hand of your kid as holy as the moment you have here. And we understand that it all works together. And because of that, we take part in the lives of our community in huge ways. We take parts in the lives of connecting here, whether that is Narcotics Anonymous, Sexual Addiction Anonymous. None of that ministry would be possible without a place to gather, a place to grow, a place to do that. And that's true for our online community as well. It is out of this place that they connect with audiovisual equipment and worship services, and it is out of this place that we've launched Midtown in a multi-site, and our ministries are shared. And so this home base, like Wheel and Spoke, or Trunk and Branches, this building makes ministry happen and flourish and community to be grown and built. And God is in the midst of all of it.
So connection makes a difference. And I think the thing about making room for all people, about changing social norms or giving without expecting to receive anything in return is that we just often don't know what that's going to do. We do it, we show up, and we don't know how God is going to take those doors that we've opened and move in incredible ways. So I'm going to tell you one last story this morning. There's a church in Texas called Lovers Lane UMC. Look, UMCs are named after where they're located. I know. So it's called Lovers Lane UMC. And the founding pastor of that church was named Tom Shipp. And he had a story that I think illustrates this so well. So when Tom was young, his mother died, and his dad had to go away to just make a living and provide for the family. And so Tom and his siblings were left with, you know, no parents. They had to be sent to different homes to live with different families. And the first family that Tom ended up with, they did not make room for him. The first night that he went to eat dinner with this family, the father there said, "No, there's no room for you at this table. You can eat your dinner on the porch, and we've made a bed for you in the barn." So you can imagine what it was like to live with this family. I mean, it was traumatic, it was terrible, and it didn't last that long. He could not stay in that situation. And so he moved in with a new family, and this family was the complete opposite. They welcomed him in. They treated him like he had always been there. They loved him well. They incorporated him into their family unit. They also took him to church. And so he had his real transformational moment on a communion Sunday. It was his first time ever receiving communion at a church, and this was the kind of church where people would walk to the front, and they would kneel, and the pastor would come around with the bread and the cup, and you'd receive the elements that way. So Tom came down front with the father that he was living with, and he took his place, he kneeled, and then he looked next to him. And it was the guy that he had lived with before. I mean, it was not a big town, right? So everyone is there. And as the pastor came up to Tom to offer him the bread and the cup, the father from the first home, the father who told him there was no room for him at this table, grabbed his arm and said, "This is not for you." Well, as that happened, the father from the new home leaned over and grabbed the other guy's arm. I just want to say, my empathy for the pastor in this moment, it's off the charts, because he's just holding the bread and the cup. Just what are we going to do? But he grabbed the other guy's arm, and he said to him, "This is not your table." And over, he said to him, "This is not your table." And finally, they all let go. Tom received the elements. And that experience stuck with him. And as he started his ministry, as he started his church, he said, we have to make room for everyone in this place. He started welcoming AA groups in before that was a thing that churches really did. Their church gathered together and they said, who are the people who don't feel welcome here, who don't feel like they have a place in a church? Those are the people that we want to create a church for. Because he experienced a moment of inclusion, he extended that inclusion to other people. Church, when I hear that story, I think, that's who I hope that we are. That's who I hope we keep growing to be. A church where we can say we've experienced welcome. We've experienced someone making space for us. We have experienced the love and grace of Jesus, and we can't keep that to ourselves. We have to extend that to as many people as possible. And so as you think about your role in this whole making room thing, I hope that you keep that in front of you. You know, in your bulletin, you've got this sheet and this envelope. And your role in this campaign might be to make a gift over 3 years. It might be. That might be a position that you find yourself in. I want to encourage you to take this with you, to pray about it, and decide if that's the part you're going to play. But your role might also look like the fact that you're going to say, I'm going to commit for 3 years to pray for the people who we're going to make room for, to pray for who we're becoming as a church and for where God is leading us. You might even be sitting there today and thinking, you know, I've been coming to this place, I've been attending, but I might like to give a little bit of myself. I might want to serve. I might want to get involved in a different way. All of those are critical ways to be involved in what we're doing. All of those are critical ways to help us make room. Because what I know is that whatever your involvement looks like, we all play a part in creating this community, and we all play a part in making room. As the band comes up to lead us in our closing song, I just want to lead us in a moment of prayer. A moment of prayer for what God is doing, a moment of prayer for where God is taking us. So I want to invite you to pray with me now. God, it is a great blessing to be able to make room for others. It is a great blessing to extend the table, to open the doors of the church, to say that really and truly every single person is welcome in this place. God, it is a gift to be a church that looks for people who may have felt rejected, who may have felt unwelcome, and to find a way to say, you're welcome here. God, I pray that you would be at work in our hearts, not only today, but just as we grow and live our lives as a church community, that would be our mission, to show as many people as possible the love and grace that we have experienced from you, Jesus. Help that be our goal. Help us make that room. Amen.